Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coffee with Innovate Finance, our podcast series where we speak to industry leaders on the future of financial services and fintech. Our podcasts are available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts. I'm Janine Hurt, CEO at Innovate Finance, and today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Philip Bellamont, Zilch CEO and co-founder. Hi, Phil. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, Janine. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk first a little bit about Zilch. I'm pretty sure almost everyone listening knows about Zilch, but for those who may not, can you give us a brief description of what Zilch is in a nutshell? What does it mean, pay your way anywhere?
So really what Zilch is and what we created or set out to create from the get-go was this kind of pay any way you want for anything you want, any way you want. That was the concept of our product. So the whole idea was, we give you all the best of a debit card, cashback card, and all the best of a credit card combined into one product that you can use anywhere and obviously for anything. And so really what we ended up actually launching and rolling out and has become very popular is a product that allows customers to go anywhere they like with a virtual MasterCard, and they can pay everything at checkout and get unreal and unbelievable deals, discounts, and cashbacks better than any product you've ever seen, better than any other product in the market today. Or they can, through the app, decide they want to defer the price of this item, the payment for this item, and they can pay it over a period of just 6 weeks, or they can pay it over a longer period of now 3 months. And they can do that at a very low cost or for free. And so that really is the product all baked into one. And what we hope one day is that we become really this cash flow convenience product for customers, almost that like a financial heartbeat of your cash flow for the customers, where we can start to see, when are you being paid? When is your next payday? When is your next salary? When is your next wage? What is your cash flow? What's your current position in your bank account? And ideally recommend to you the best ways to pay for the current purchase that you're making and for what you're buying. But that's where we are today, and that's what the product kind of has evolved into over the last 3 years.
And you've had such an exciting journey as the Zilch team, but for a minute, I'd actually like to focus on your own personal journey, because you've had an amazing career as an entrepreneur as well, Phil. So could you tell us a little bit more about your career growth and also your early experiences?
Sure. So I'm South African. I went to university in South Africa, to a university called Rau. And when I left university, I wanted to start, I was just obsessed with mobile devices. So I really wanted to do something in mobile technology, which that sounds like a weird thing to say out loud today, because everyone's like, mobile technology. I mean, obviously everything is mobile technology, right? But back then we had Nokia 3310s and green screen phones. So, you know, picture like Snake and Snake version 2. And kind of when I left university, I wanted to start a social gaming platform. So the concept was, people could actually use data on their phones and play these simple games we would create. And they could use their airtime minutes. So everyone was on prepaid. No one had a contract. You had to go and top up your minutes, and then you would use your minutes when you phoned someone on text. And you could use your minutes to play our games. And you could transfer these minutes to one another through the games. And what we found was that we went out, we launched this, we were really excited, and we had a lot of traction in people buying minutes and transferring minutes, but no one was playing the games. And so ultimately what we realized is that we had largely failed at becoming the world's best ads, you know, social ad gaming platform. But we had, by pure mistake, built a fintech company. We had actually moved into payments and financial services. And so we scrapped all of the games and we started focusing on our competitions, our person-to-person money moving, this type of thing. And what we realized at that moment was that, interestingly, moving from gaming into fintech and financial services, the suite of problems that we were solving for people were vastly different. And all of a sudden, this became personal. And it became really, really critical and important. You know, uptime now was not a question. When you're providing a social gaming service and it's your first business and everyone's 20 years old, you know, it sort of goes down. You're like, oh my gosh, and everyone tries their best and you get it back up and you do what you can. when you move into financial services, it's very different. And so, you know, we had to grow up quite fast in understanding people's needs and helping people to get what they want when they need it, because they started to depend and rely on this product. And you know, just to complete the story or the background here, the one product that we launched that was very successful, that sort of has teed up, if I retrospectively look at it now, but has teed up this journey into Zilch, was our product in airtime minute lending that we launched. And so what we did with this was, there was a big problem in South Africa particularly, where people would travel on the weekends, very long distances. They would queue for hours just to buy prepaid electricity for their electricity meters, or prepaid airtime minutes for their phones, so that they could speak to people on the weekend and have electricity in their homes. And that could take the whole of Saturday, in some cases running in Sunday, just to do this. You get back home, you spend half a day with your family, and you're back at work all week on the Monday. And so we wanted to solve this problem for people. And the real challenge was, how do we bring this to people on their couch at home on the weekend? And so what we did is, we ended up creating a service that would lend the airtime minutes to people on the weekend, to their phones in their home, or the prepaid electricity. And they would then be able to consume that through the weekend. And when they got back to work on the Monday, we would use the infrastructure that already existed from the mobile network operators, all of the shops and retail outlets you could go top up. And we would use those to collect the money back on the Monday or the Tuesday when it was convenient for that customer, because they were back where this was easily accessible and they didn't have to travel because they were already there. And this completely transformed millions of people's lives in South Africa. And we went on to roll this out in many other African countries. This was our most successful product. And what was interesting is, from a business point of view, that sort of completely changed the way, at least I thought about certain things. And what I found was, in this case, the value, the real value, was that if you could introduce a buyer to a seller at the most opportune moment, the highest intent moment, in the slickest way possible, that seller would see huge value in this, and they would be prepared to shift some of their margin to you for facilitating this and making this happen on an ongoing and infinite basis. And you could use that revenue from the seller to obviously build a very healthy, successful, and profitable company, but at the same time, pass some of that revenue onto the consumer, ensuring that the price point you offer your product at is either very low cost or free to the mass market. And that was just a fantastic lesson to learn in the engineering of a business model that we would go on to use now in Zilch and for other products and services we've launched in this business. So that was my first sort of step into financial service and fintech, and was probably the first time I've ever seen technology truly transform people's lives. Because up until then, a lot of people would always talk about this and how fintech or financial services changes lives for the better. It was so hard to ever see that really in action. But this was such a tangible way of us seeing families reunited with friends, et cetera, on the weekend. And we were doing that for millions of people. So that's a bit of my background. And then about 10 years ago, I moved over to the UK and was really looking at the opportunities on a bigger stage, on a developed economy, a GDP that's in the top five or so of the world in the UK, and of course also the US. And the objective was, how do we run the same playbook? So is there some opportunity in this market and in the US market that exists that allows us to run a playbook that I'm familiar with? And that is, let's go find a meaningful problem for people. So a massive TAM, a problem people feel and is personal to people. And let's go and find a technical solution to solve that problem, wherein we can use the existing infrastructure that came before us to do that, to disrupt the space, disruption without any change. And at the same time, a unique business model that allows us to do this for the mass market at a price point typically reserved for the wealthy. And that's the playbook. And so obviously financial services and consumer credit was the space for us to really look at. And that's how we got into Zilch.
And I love this, because I think your journey really reflects how important it is to actually listen to the consumer and cater to the consumer and put the consumer at the heart of the proposition, because that ultimately is what will lead to success on the longer term. Phil, you obviously have been quite successful. You've given a bit of a description there about your earlier journey. What have been your milestones along your career that you remember most fondly?
That is a difficult question to answer off the top of my head. I mean, the things that come to mind are, you know, this first business out of South Africa, founding that business out of university with a few friends, completely failing at the initial mission, but pivoting into what became a very successful business, exiting that business, you know, alongside all of these friends and partners. And for me, a lot of the milestones and a lot of the things I remember fondly are always the team and the people. I mean, that has to be said. You know, so I would certainly say that first venture, moving over to the UK and beginning, you know, this business, Zilch, obviously hitting some of the milestones we have here in such a short period of time, millions of customers. A lot of people look at our business and think about our $2 billion valuation and the money we've raised. That's actually, of course, we're excited about that stuff, but it's not what we celebrate in the business. The milestones we celebrate are the £300 million we've saved customers in fees and interest. You know, that's a massive milestone. I look at that and I still think every day, wow, what an achievement in just 3 years. You know, 3.5 million customers, fantastic. And then some of the personal stuff, I kind of, you know, I've always sort of made it a rule for awards. I tend to rather, you know, not go to the awards ceremonies. I like the whole team to go and get the awards and pick up the awards on the company's behalf, because for me, everything's a team effort. But, you know, just recently I was awarded the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Award, which was exciting. Before that, the Great British Entrepreneur of the Year Award, which was also very exciting. But all of that for me is kind of like, I think back on them and I think the milestone is more, what have we achieved as a company together? How much fun are we having along the way? You know, and I would say probably being able to hold it all together and still spend time with my son and my wife along the way has been very rewarding too. So I don't know, I'm trying to give you a bit of an in a nutshell, but 20 or so years, it's tough to remember each of the moments.
So let me dig actually into this last point you've made, because a lot of times we talk about this on this podcast, we talk with entrepreneurs and we discuss driving a positive culture internally. We also discuss how challenging it can be to find that work-life balance. Do you have any secrets or anything that you do to try and achieve that balance for yourself that you can share?
Yeah, I'm not the best person with this. So the problem with me is I'm quite obsessive. And I think I actually genuinely believe you must be obsessed to be successful. I don't know any other way. You know, my father taught me this. He was the same. But and I certainly try to replicate some of how he does things. My mother's the same as well. You know, my father was obsessed with being brilliant at what he did, and he was an entrepreneur and built a brilliant business in payments. You know, but he was also obsessed with being there for us. You know, when I played rugby at school, I could choose, I could pass the ball to the wing, or I could skip the wing and pass it to my father. you know, so you know, my mother was the same. She was a homemaker and looked after the kids, and she was obsessed about it. She was the best at it. And that's just how I was raised. So I don't really look at anything being a balance. I think it's just, what are you obsessing about? And, you know, my wife has been with me for more than 17 years. So she was with me through the first company, this business as well. So she gets it and knows it. And she appreciates and understands that. And I think that is very useful. So I would say a partner or people around you get it and understand how you think about the world. And then learning how to coexist with everything you're obsessing over. And I certainly would like to think, we would have to ask her and my son, but I hope they would say, I equally obsess over them as I do about the business. And so it's natural. It's very easy. I don't sit on a Sunday and sit down to do some work, people would call it. It's my hobby. I don't sit and do that and think, ooh, you know, I better do a few hours of this and then go do something else. I'm excited to be sitting there. I can't, in fact, wait to go and sit and do that. And then equally, I can't wait to go and we run around and pretend you're a fire truck. so, you know, so it's maybe not the best answer,
It's perhaps, a great answer.
Yeah, but perhaps people would like something a bit more specific. But for me, I think if it feels like work, you should probably just go and get obsessed about saying and do that rather. That would be my view.
It's a very authentic answer. And I think a lot of our listeners will probably have that resonate with them quite a bit as well. All right, Phil. So moving on then from family and your personal experiences, let's talk about industry and Zilch and some of the broader issues facing the sector as well. Now, we have had conversations before, and we know that sometimes BNPL or credit cards in general, they can receive criticism as it is thought that it might lead to consumers overspending. But we know that Zilch always talks about responsible spending. So how do you at Zilch promote that? And what is the relationship with your vulnerable customers that makes Zilch so different from other providers of credit? I know you've talked a bit about this, but if you could develop, that would be great.
Sure. So maybe for your listeners, just to differentiate between what we do and how we do it versus, let's say, traditional installment payment point of sale finance companies. So as a consumer, if you get to the checkout page of a website and you notice that some of these sites will give you payment terms, so they'll say you can obviously check out using your MasterCard, Visa card, or you can choose one of these installment payment plans. Let's say maybe it's Klarna or one of these brands, Afterpay, et cetera. And this would allow you to pay in installments over time. That's how some of the traditional businesses go about doing things. Zilch is different to that. We go directly to the customer and we sign the customer up for our service. We're a fully regulated provider. And so the customer signs up, they sign our terms and conditions. This they do in their own time. They download our app and they understand what this product is all about. They understand they can use this product to pay everything at checkout. They can defer payment. They can change their minds. They can build their credit. It's a direct-to-consumer proposition. And the best way to think about this, it's a strange parallel, but it's an interesting one, is if you think about hospitality, right? Hospitality is what happens, is how you feel when something happens for you. It's not what happens to you. Service providing is what happens to you, right? Hospitality is what happens for you. So to make that distinction, if you get to the checkout page of a retailer as a consumer and you are offered a bunch of options, okay, you can pay this back in 6 months for X APR, or you could pay it over 12 months. This is happening to you, right? The retailer and some service provider have agreed a few options that make sense to them and their margins, and they are offering what makes sense to them, to you. It's happening to you. In Zilch's case, we want this to happen for you. Finance is personal. So we want to give you a product that you can use ubiquitously anywhere you like and for anything you like, however you like, right? It must be for you, not for the retailer. And so the objective of our product is our customer can choose how they wish to pay, what's best for their cash flow, how they're going to budget, and the best for their affordability on a long-term sustainable basis to pay for what they're buying anywhere and for anything. And that's the fundamental difference. So to come back to really answering your question, first and foremost, this is a deferred payment. In other words, it's a liability the customer must repay in the future. That typically, the world normally calls that credit, right? A lot of people like to forget that. And the way we see this is it must be regulated. And that's why Zilch today remains one of the only players at scale to be regulated in the UK. And that's why customers trust and believe in us. They understand that if something goes wrong, they have recourse, they can report this to the ombudsman, they need these protections. Plus, on top of that, we obviously report to all of the bureaus. And some customers might go, oh, I don't like that. This is very responsible. This helps customers ensure they're not overborrowing from other providers because everyone is on the same page. And vice versa. And so for us, that is the commitment we're making to customers. That's why it's so different from what you see on these buttons on the checkout page. We don't want customers acting on impulse. We don't want customers using products that are unregulated. We want customers making a conscious decision to manage their cash flow in a different way. And it's based on what's good for them, not what might be good to sell another dress or pair of shoes for a retailer. And that's the difference here.
So let's also then dive into this point that you've made on the regulatory front, because how do you see regulatory commissions having evolved and which countries in your perspective are leading the way?
It's tough to answer that, obviously, for all the jurisdictions. It's tough, you know, because we only know some of the ones that we're intrinsically involved in. But, you know, what I will say is, through all of our experience, or sorry, my experience before in South Africa, Africa, you know, those regimes are either to some degree copies of, for instance, the UK policies. We see that quite a bit. Or kind of, you know, not well formed. So in those cases, I would say they're probably lagging in some, to some degree. Different countries are obviously different. South Africa is a bit of a standout. But when you look at the UK, I don't think I've ever seen a regulator that's as forward thinking as the UK. So even the CFPB, if you consider the US, you know, you would say quite forward thinking, quite on top of things, very active as a regulator as well. But we're not seeing things like the Innovation Hub or kind of the sandbox process that the FCA regulator has here in the UK yet. So right now, we really do think that the UK is kind of on the leading edge. A lot of how they engage, a lot of how they talk to firms, you know, there is a lot of communication. It's actually quite surprising to see how much the regulator engages with the industry and takes that feedback and includes it in their thinking. So, you know, so right now, I would say certainly we're quite bullish on where the UK is at. And we think they do have an opportunity to set a blueprint in a lot of this moving forward. If you think about the CFPB is almost following similar steps now in the BNPL space in the US. So they're going through this consultancy process themselves. But I would probably say the UK is certainly a gold standard. There's no doubt about it. And we are seeing a lot of interaction with the CFPB too in the US. So certainly we think the UK is probably a bit ahead of the game, and their sandbox process, we do strongly, I would recommend that to anyone who's looking at building anything in the fintech space.
That's great to hear that comment around the UK essentially setting the gold standard on the regulatory side of things. And you had a very international career, and ultimately you could have chosen anywhere in the world to start a fintech. So was there anything beyond the regulatory framework that drew you to London and to the UK?
There's a number of things. I mentioned earlier, the most critical piece of any business is the team. So, you know, so it doesn't really matter what you're doing. If you don't have a fantastic team, it doesn't matter. You're just never going to get it done. So, you know, so for me, what we wanted to do was build a product here that would be masspirational, is kind of the term we use. We want something for the mass market. We want people to look at this and go, it doesn't matter where I'm from, my background, my culture, the way I think about the world. I look at this product and I see some of myself in this product, right? I feel good about using this product. And that's really what we want to achieve. And so we've always said to the team, if you look at our business today, we are such a diverse team. And I think being in London has played a huge role in us being able to, frankly, achieve that, right? If you look at London, it's such a diverse boiling pot of culture and background. And so that's, you know, the talent pool is just, by virtue of the location we're in, very mixed from every perspective. And so really kind of we thought, look, the UK is right in the middle of, if you take Europe and you take the US, which are the regions we aspire to be big in, you know, the UK sort of sits in the middle of all of that. You're 6 hours from the East Coast and, you know, you're on the doorstep of Europe. And so we really looked at it and said, location-wise, it's a great spot. From a people point of view, it's very diverse. Regulatory policies and infrastructure, there's a lot to support up-and-coming businesses here. You've got schemes like SEIS, EIS, EMI. You've got all of these good things going on. Unfortunately, we don't qualify for any of those, but that's for another day. But you've got a lot of support. And the R&D support has been fantastic for us as a firm as we've gone. And in the early days, those rebates of R&D are massive for us, right? Big cash flow relief for us in the early days as well. So I would say it's a combination of the people, the policies, the location, and then, you know, you include things like regulation in that and the forward-thinking nature of the sandbox, plus, of course, the size of the market, the GDP, the strength of the market, and the currency. So all of those things just meant this is a great opportunity. And the final point I will say is, if you think about late-stage fintech unicorns throughout Europe, half of those, just over half of those, are in the UK, and almost all of them in London. So, you know, again, when you're looking at a world map and you're saying, well, do we do this in, you know, in here or over there, you kind of look and you go, all of these reasons point to, let's do this in the UK. It makes a lot of sense. So I have to say, best move we could have made. And, you know, we're very pleased and proud to have our HQ here.
Well, that's great to hear, Phil. And I think just to close out the conversation, let's look to the future. So what are the key trends that you are seeing in the sector? And actually, what's next for Zilch?
Yeah, I mean, the trends that we're seeing, we're just seeing commerce be transformed, basically. I mean, is I suppose a good way to put it. And our unique business model, so the model that we've deployed in Zilch is that effectively we generate ad revenue from retailers and we use that revenue to subsidize the cost of credit for customers. So we have to fully price credit risk. And that's where, for any of the listeners, you typically see APRs, interest rates. And with a credit card, that's just what you end up having to pay. With Zilch, most of our credit is completely free. And the way we do that is that we generate ad revenue from the brands that you're shopping at, because we're introducing a buyer to a seller at the most opportune moment with the least amount of friction. And the brands are willing to pay us a commission for doing that. And we can take that revenue and use that to take your 20% APR cost to zero, plus run a sustainable, profitable company. That's what makes the scale so big. That's why we've gone from zero to 3.5 million customers in just 3 years since launching. So, but that combination now speaks to the question, to answering your question, Janine, which is, well, what's the future? The future is commerce is completely changing. Before companies like Zilch came along, you would have brands advertising on social media and search and paying billions for them to do that. And then customers would maybe see those ads or maybe a billboard and that ad. And then the customer would go and click on that ad, go to the website to walk into the store and pull out their credit card and pay billions in fees and interest to credit card companies to buy the products. And so around and around we went. What Zilch is doing is actually circumventing all of that complexity and actually combining all of them in one place. And so what that means is that you kind of have this overlap of shopping, credit, advertising, and Zilch is right at the epicenter of this. And so you're seeing this new sort of breed of media called retail media that's growing. And so if you think about the phases of media, you started with billboard above the line TV, you then went to search digital, so you could click and actually see these clicks in real time, like Google. Then you went to social, and we know all the social companies that are monetizing the data in the ways that they do. And you could finally start to guess what people wanted because they would look alike somebody else. Now you're moving to retail media, and this is where Zilch plays. So we're not guessing what you want. We know exactly what you've bought, and everywhere that you've bought it, we know exactly how much liquidity you have today and what you're about to have tomorrow. And our product is ubiquitous and you can use it everywhere. So we can offer to you value for what you want, exactly when you want it, and help you convert to buy that thing with cash flow if you need it. And that, we believe, is the future of commerce. And that's what brands are willing to pay a lot of money for, and why you're seeing that this has become the biggest revenue, in fact, just overtaken prime revenue for Amazon, is retail media. And we're seeing that here too. So we think that's the direction of travel. And we think that Zilch, you know, when a lot of our investors think about our company, lots of companies talk about a TAM, and they will, for instance, say, well, the credit card market is this big. We think we can own a slice of that market in 5 or 10 years' time. We don't think about it that way. We think about it a bit differently. We are creating a whole new TAM that today doesn't exist. And we expect to monopolize the majority of that TAM in the next 5 or so years. And so that's what's so exciting about where we're headed. So I hope that answers the question, but that's really where we see ourselves playing in the ecosystem and how we fit in the world.
Phil, that's a great note for us to end on. So I just want to thank you so much for your time and for sharing your perspective on the future of the sector and the future of Zilch, and also on your personal journey as well. So thank you, everyone. And thank you to listeners for tuning in. That's all for this episode. Please keep an eye out for our upcoming Coffee with Innovate Finance episodes. All our previous episodes are available on our website. So do take a look at our catalog for many more insights on fintech and financial innovation. Thanks once again, and join us next time for Coffee with Innovate Finance. Bye for now.